from Windsor House, and they're people who didn't go to school at all, wanted a place for youth to hang out where they could hang out and do their projects.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
But they wouldn't feel like they were in somebody's like social service space, and they didn't want to have like another patronizing adult telling them what they should do. They just wanted a space to do their own stuff and work collectively. They got hooked up with Matt Hearn, who knew most of them, I guess. Matt Hearn, who helped start the space, and who's our executive director and our money guy, and he's very instrumental in the fact that this place exists. It's really his fault that this place is around. And they sat around his kitchen table for a year or so and talked about what they wanted, what they didn't want, stuff that was essential, stuff that would be great. And eventually they found a one-bedroom apartment on Commercial Drive. The address was 1163, and it was just a tiny little place. And back then they had art space, and they had computer space. They had songwriting groups. They had a songwriting group with Kenny Starr. They had a writing group with, I think, Marcus Yosef. They did some circus hookups with the Leaky Evans Circus and all manner of things. We had different guest speakers, and they plastered the place in their own art, but the landlord got sick of them. There was some bad blood there, so we got kicked out after our first 2 years there.
So you've moved into your new space, and where is it located now? We can just talk a bit about how that looks like, the virtual tour.
Right now we are in the Murgatroyd building, which is a bright green building on the corner of Parker and Vernon Street, which is one block southwest of Clark and Venables. We're in one of the top floors. I think we've got about 1,500 feet or so. It's kind of shaped, it's a full square, but it's shaped in a U with a room in the middle for quiet. And it's funny, we called it a quiet room, but we've got all our servers in it, so it's actually a humming room. But we use it for animation and stuff like that. And then we've got a dark room and stuff. So if you came into the Thistle, you would be looking straight down one of the shafts of the U, I guess. We've got a huge open space that is home to a lot of our art supplies, a substantial meeting area with couches, and a zine library. Then in the back, there's a little corner office where there's a bit of quiet space. That's where I am right now. And there's a library in here of about 1,000 books.
Now, that zine library you mentioned is actually one of the biggest in Canada.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest in Canada. We don't know if it's the actual biggest, but we've got somewhere between 1,000 and 5,000 zines. I don't even know. It's just a huge, like, an endless archive of people's crap. We're at the base of the U. That is a major work area. It's got a different floor, like a different flooring on it, so it's easier to scuff up, and it's kind of covered in paint, and we've got all our art supplies there, and carving tools, and a sewing machine, and we've got some bike tools, so we've got some construction tools, we've got a little kitchenette in that area, so it's all crammed in there. We've got bookshelves all against the walls, and we've got pretty high ceilings too, so I mean, the place is crammed, but it doesn't feel as crammed as it could be because we've got these 14-foot ceilings, which are just great. We've started building lofts for storage and things. On the end of the U, we have a dark room. It's one of our sort of a flagship thing that we have is a dark room, along with our zine library and our computer labs and our animation equipment. Some of the really major stuff that people go, wow, you've got that stuff, where people come in and shoot their own film with the photography glass and they'll develop it there, or we've got a Super 8 class going and they develop film in there. And then right by that we've got our huge computer lab, which is souped up with Adobe Suites and everything awesome you could possibly hope for in a computer. So it's really just like we've got about 10 computers and they're all office worthy, so people can come in and it's basically like a community office. Yeah, it's accessible and it's open to anybody.
And so now, to take courses or to even to participate, do you need to be a member or do you need to pay a fee?
No, not right now. We're doing a member drive a little bit, but it's not so much for people who want to use the center as much as it is for organizations who want to stay informed or individuals who want to stay informed. And we're setting up an internet PayPal thing right now for that. But for ordinary youth who just want to come in and use our computers, you just come in and use our computers. Don't need to sign up. There's no fees. Some of the classes we charge a little bit of fees for supplies. An example would be like the Super 8 group asks for $15 for a roll of Super 8, but that's a lot cheaper than you would get it if you got it straight from Kodak, which is pretty much the only other place you can get it. Or our film class, like our photography class, charges small fees. Sometimes we do some pretty expensive stuff where people, you know, kick down money, but I think the most we've ever asked anybody for is $20.
And then you were saying some of the classes you feel that you have to say it's only for youth, right?
Yeah, that's definitely true. We try to be as inclusive as we can with age because as youth we recognize that people are always sort of judged on their age in society, and there are huge gaps between the way that youth live, the way that children live, the way that adults live, of any range. I mean, adult is a huge age range. There are lots of societies where that's not as prevalent, or, I mean, lots of communities where adults feel that they can talk to youth about stuff, or youth feel they can talk to their elders about, you know, things like sex or whatever. I don't know, not that everybody should be talking about sex with their grandmother, but, you know, I mean, it'd be nice if we felt open enough to be able to share things across age boundaries. But at the same time, we are trying to create a safe space for youth. So there are times when we have a class open and, you know, as much as we'd love to have adults come and participate, we can't because we have to primarily make sure that we are creating a safe space for youth. Sometimes it just doesn't work out. If a 13-year-old and a 40-year-old want to do a life drawing class together, that's awesome. But if you're doing something more intensive, say like our web design class, you can't really keep up having, you know, a bunch of 40-year-olds in the same room learning as a 13-year-old. Mm-hmm. Not that the 13-year-old can't keep up, but it's definitely going to be alienating for the 13-year-old because of the age difference and because of the typical relationship between people who in the society who are 40 years old and people who are 13. The 13-year-old is definitely going to feel, you know, put in their place, and they're going to feel young and stupid and patronized because that's what they're used to feeling around 40-year-olds.
Radio Free School, a show by, for, and about home learners.
You did mention that you have some adults or good mentors out there.
Yes, definitely. Case in point is Brenda Carr, who is here right now. She's an older lady, and the youth here totally identify with her, and she's been working in street arts for, I don't even know, you know, 20 to 30 years, and she's got roots in the community, and she's got a natural affinity with young people, and people trust her, and so she's more than welcome, and she's here, and she hangs out, and, I mean, she's definitely one of the people that's actively breaking that barrier between elderly people, or older people, or older adults, and young people. Like, I've had great conversations with Brenda. I'm only 23 years old, and I feel like I can definitely identify with her. Mm-hmm. And I know 13-year-olds who said the exact same thing. Another example is Matt Hearn. He's another example. You know, we can relate to him like a peer. And it's not that he's an immature human being. I mean, he's got kids, he's got a career, he's doing his thing. He teaches at universities, but he he can still, you know, sit down and have a beer with some of us, or, you know, old enough to drink, we can go out and just shoot the shit with him and hang out, and, yeah, like, I feel as comfortable around Matt as I do around my roommates, so, or, like, Dan Bushnell as well, who can, you know, spin a yarn. He's amazing, and I can totally relate to him, and they're both in their 30s.
So that's great, but then you did mention something about sometimes just with there's still that maybe dependency on adults for grant writing or things like that. You wanted to explain that a bit more?
Yeah, that's definitely something that's changing as we change our base a little bit. The Thistle is definitely home to a few people who have been with it for years and years and years, and as they grow up, this definitely changes a lot, and as they become more self-reliant, and as we attract more people who are self-reliant, this changes a lot, but it's still an issue, which is that because of Matt's position as kind of the name with the PhD that will get us our grants or that will get us our credibility or that will, you know, do interviews for the Georgia Strait and sound super smart and nobody's going to call him a dumb punk kid. I think he's probably been called a dumb punk kid many times.
Sure.
But people still sort of rely on him sometimes for things that they don't need to rely on him for. And often there is a dynamic where he becomes, I like to call it Daddy Thistle, and I make fun of him by calling him Daddy Thistle. Or actually, I don't make fun of him because it's not really his fault most of the time. I mean, sometimes he's, you know, overprotective and he needs to just back off, but he recognizes that. But they're more common is for kids to just say, oh, Matt will do it, or oh, I'll go through Matt, or I'll do this through Matt, or why don't I just talk to Matt about this? When in reality, we have a better understanding of what's going on than he does, and we don't need to go through him, but people are still very hesitant to take it on themselves, and so I sort of remind people by being like, oh, should we ask Daddy Thistle? Do we need his go-ahead for this? Sort of a thing to kind of remind we don't need to rely on Matt, and he would love it if we didn't rely on him at all. I mean, there are lots of programs now, like I said, it's changing, and there are lots of programs now, the Dream Seeds program, the Lester's Army magazine, the AV group to some extent, the animation group, they're all self-reliant, and they're youth-led, they're youth-driven, and they're done by people who have gotten the grants themselves and who do the administration themselves and maybe needs Matt's signature for something, or maybe he needs his advice over something small, but it's definitely changing pretty fast. All those programs are youth-led, and the ideal for the Thistle is if Matt sort of is our sort of figurehead to get the credibility when we need it, to talk to people, to go to, you know, boring city meetings and stuff, although I'm going to have to do that stuff soon. But if he's just getting money and, you know, he's free to do his own stuff, and we get all of the supplies and all of the operating funds, basically, we're totally in business.
I'm Noam Chomsky. You're listening to Radio Free School on CFMU 93.3.
My name's Sean. I work with the Purple Thistle Center.
Well, how's the center run? Who pays, you know, who comes up with the ideas for the programs or stuff like that?
Well, the center is run by a collective of basically everyone who volunteers and works there. And it's a consensus decision-making. We're pretty small, so it's pretty informal. And then as far as funding goes, generally, although other people have done fundraising in the past, Matt is our main fundraiser. He kind of just fundraises from home and finds us the money and lets us run the center.
So it's really youth-driven then, right? Like, you guys come up with ideas.
Well, I mean, we don't even really like the term youth. It's kind of a condescending term, but it is. For all intents and purposes. We're trying to be more of a community center and less of like a youth drop-in center kind of thing.
Right, right.
It's becoming a lot more well-known. I think we're going into something like our fifth year. So we've been around for a while and we're pretty well-established and known in the community, including myself. The young crew has kind of grown up and a lot of the original members of the collective have moved on and gone on to do other things. And there's a lot of new young people coming in, and there's this whole, you know, like there's two generations of us, kind of, now.
Yeah.
And that aside, Matt used to take a lot more of an active role in the center, whereas now he's taking a step back and he's just doing the fundraising.
Right.
And he's kind of leaving it more to us to run.
How's that proven to be? Pretty good?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It runs pretty smoothly, if you ask me.
Okay, so, like, I mean, how do you get the community involved?
We have done things like even, like, just put up posters and whatever, telling people the facilities that we have available to use. And, you know, when people are like, oh, they hear, like, that we have a dark room, they're pretty excited and they want to come down. down, especially when they hear it's free.
As a collective, like, what would make it better?
We would need funding. We're always kind of generally strapped for cash, and, you know, the center wouldn't exist if it wasn't for, like, thousands of volunteer hours that people have put in. Like, people have put in a lot of work and, you know, really deserve to be commended for that. We're starting sort of a free recording studio, free music studio project out of the center. And once again, that's something that has been held back due to funding.
How about more skilled people to help, you know?
Well, I mean, like, we always want more skilled people to come by and get involved, but I mean, we have a plethora of extraordinarily skilled people at our disposal who've done so much work for us. That doesn't really, you know, seem to be something that we're lacking in. I mean, of course we would always welcome somebody new with a new skill to come and get involved. And having grown up in Hamilton, where you guys are,
right,
I found the education system there to be absolutely, like, appalling. I found that there wasn't really the alternatives that, like the Thistle, there wasn't those alternatives that, like, they just didn't exist. And when I was young and looking for alternatives to school and high school and trying to get out because I knew it was bad for me, I just, you know, went looking for alternatives and found that they were just non-existent.
I feel that maybe if kids knew that there are other ways to do stuff in it.
Definitely, like, if I would have known at a younger age, I definitely would have tried to have gotten involved. I mean, and God knows I tried, but, you know, there just wasn't anything.
Okay, so, I mean, if we could get more people learning about things like this and willing to maybe try and create different alternatives?
Yeah, and create more alternatives and make them bigger and get more people involved, because, you know, there's a great deal of people who are dissatisfied with the education system in its current state. Fundamentally, they're not a good place for learning.
I don't know how you came up with the name, but that would be interesting too.
Yeah, there's a story behind it. It's been along lines that thistles are a resilient plant, and you can cut them down, and no matter how much you cut them down, they'll just still grow back. And if you plant them in asphalt, they'll grow back. Yeah, like, just like, no matter what you do to try and get rid of them, they just keep coming.
Take the special strength.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
So can you just tell me a little bit more about some of the programs that the kids are doing?
Mm-hmm. Typically the way the FISL runs is we have an HRSDC Skills Link program that runs. We've done two different ones so far. We had one that ran for three consecutive years, another that has been running for one so far, and we'll probably get more funding. The first one was a publishing program where the main priority was to create a portfolio of zine work and graphic design work and writing work for every youth that participated. The publishing program was started in 2002, and it was mainly for creating zine portfolios and magazine portfolios, writing and graphic design for the youth that participated. And it was run by Matt and by Dan Bushnell, who's our graphic design guru, and by one of our youth participants, Mosa, who is a web genius, and they taught us how to write like creative and non-fiction writing, as well as expository essays. They taught us how to edit and how to copy edit. They taught us how to do proper graphic design for posters and anything we needed to do, magazines mostly. And Marissa taught us how to put all that stuff on the web, how to use InDesign, how to use Photoshop, how to do all the computer editing parts of it. It was pretty exceptional. We ran for three different years. Youth produced three personal zines, two collective zines, and two collective magazines in the span of 6 months. We also had a web project that most of us completed. It was pretty great. And that was a pretty awesome program. And then we had Dream Seeds, which is still running, which is an empowerment program for young women, and they learn grant writing and self-employment and self-care. And it's pretty awesome. There's lots of people who just, you know, gather their stuff and sort of get their crap together to either be self-employed or to run their own business or to be grant writing artists, blah, blah, blah. And that's also a pretty awesome program. That typically runs from 9:30 to 3:30, regardless of the age or the skills link program we're running, either the publishing program or the Dream Seeds. We'll run from 9:30 to 3:30. And then there's a bit of a transition between 3:30 and 4. And then from 4 to 10, we run any number of programs. On Mondays, we do web design from, I believe, 6 to 8 or so. And that's web design for young women. And that's one of the ones where we specifically ask that participants are 13 to 26, I think is the usual age. And the younger, the better is what we kind of emphasize. But, you know, young at heart, 30-year-olds are welcome to apply. But, and then in the evenings on Monday, we have a staff meeting, a full collective meeting, where everybody comes together and guests are welcome. And we just talk about the admin stuff in the FISL, you know, the budget, make major decisions, things like that. On Tuesdays, we have an AV group, which is currently doing a Super 8 and experimental filmmaking program. It's mostly a drop-in, though people are encouraged, if they're new, to just keep in contact and they want to learn about Super 8 rather than just get straight to creating it. We do intro courses, or intro workshops, really, once every month or so. So we also have an animation group running concurrently with that, where people make flip books and deal with 2D animation and do a bit of computer transferring and editing in, I believe they're using Adobe Premiere, and that's taught by an awesome guy named Steven from Emily Carr. And then we have a bike group that works in the evenings on Tuesdays, who just kind of nerd out with bikes and our tools. We've got an expert here who can teach people things, but it's mostly for people who need something specific done to their bike. On Mondays and Tuesdays, Brenda Carr is hanging out too, and so youth are encouraged to just come in and use art supplies and ask her about, you know, any number of techniques. She's a master, she's an incredible artist. And on Wednesdays, we do the photography group, which is one of our flagship programs and is so successful. It's run by another adult mentor named Chris Cameron, who is one of the best storytellers I have ever heard, and he's got stories about taking pictures of Castro and taking pictures of, I think it's Ginsburg, in like a bathroom or something. He's an incredible storyteller, and he's a great mentor, and he's been with us since the beginning. And then we have Lester's Army Magazine, which is a magazine program that's running. It's geared towards the dead. It's written by youth. It's written in collaboration with elders from the community who the youth pair up with, and the magazine is marketed towards the dead, and it's got this very like World War II added prop feel to it. It's going to be pretty excellent. It's I think they run midweek programs or something. Thursdays, we don't really have anything on Thursday afternoons right now, and we're gearing up to have some silk screen classes and a silk screen drop-in for people who want to do screen printing. And then Thursday nights, we do a life drawing class, which is a drop-in, $2 to $7 suggested donation. If you don't have any money, come anyways, but you know, we suggest that people donate some money to pay the models with. Mm-hmm. That's for 2.5 hours. People just come and draw. And then we're closed Friday, Saturday, Sunday, though we are open to people if they want to. If somebody wants to come in and be amazing and be like, I will keep it open.
How long has the center been open?
We started in the end of 2002, like fall, September 2002, in that 1163, the one-bedroom mm-hmm. apartment. I remember I was going to school at the time, actually. I was going to college. I didn't know what else to do with myself. I just moved to the city from Chilliwack, which is where I'm from. And one of my college friends, who I just met, we hit it off, and we both live in the same neighborhood, and we were on our way home, and he said, hey, you should come and see this center. I just got used to it. My friend and I just opened it.
Before I let you go, I just wanted to ask you a bit about, you did mention that you're still working on the energy of a few punk kids, transient kids.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was living in a bit of a punk house at the time, and a whole slew of kids, like 8 to 10 kids, all of a sudden showed up from all across the country, across the continent. Kids from everywhere in the States, I don't even remember, started showing up and staying at my house. And this sort of like a runoff thing, we started directing them towards the center when they were like, I want to use a computer. I want to do art stuff. I'm going to do some art stuff. Do you know where I can do this? And but at the same time, too, I've been telling people about that, but also there was a pivotal center person named Magnolia, who's still around, and she's completely crucial to the center. She still is. She was then. She'd been seeing these guys busk on the street, and she'd been getting involved in music with them because she's a violinist. And these guys had a bluegrass band, and there was a huge gang band starting where these 12 people would suddenly have a band for a while. She was telling people to go to the center and play music, because they were busking just around the corner. So all of a sudden, the Thistle, which wasn't getting very much patronage at the time, it was really just kind of a clubhouse for, you know, 10 to 12 kids, suddenly it was just full of all these punks. And it really sort of turned the place on its ear and really, really jived it up. And kind of gave it mouth-to-mouth resuscitation almost, and really just suddenly it was just a booming place. And I guess we're still kind of going on that vibe in a way. I mean, a lot of those kids are gone. They've traveled on. They're doing completely other things. They're across the continent. Some of them still drop by and find out where we are now, and we'll come and use the space. So it's really, in that way, we were able to break the barrier of just being I feel like before that there was a stigma, perhaps, that Thistle was going to be just another youth center.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that population's involvement, and because of the sort of DIY youth community, like do-it-yourself, pretty vitally independent, not always the most advantaged kids, but definitely resilient, super stubborn, very, you know, do it themselves. Because of their involvement, we've been able to transcend this is a youth center sort of a feel, and we've now become a reputable for youth by youth center, where kids who are fiercely protective of their independence will still feel comfortable coming here and talking to adults, because they know that they're not trying to, like, nobody's trying to co-opt them, and nobody's trying to say, oh, you need to change your life, because that's the last thing we need to do to people. The most important thing, as far as the Thistle is concerned, is to tell youth that what they're doing is okay, and that if they feel that they need to make choices in their lives, certain choices, then that's their decision, and that we respect that. And really, all anybody really needs to really thrive in this world, especially youth, is a bit of dignity and a bit of space to do your own thing.
The end!
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.